Come on in and set a spell, neighbors. Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and the other in Ozark folklore and traditions, and generally speaking, to help brighten your day. Good morning, Mae.
Good morning, Ron Hembry. Ron Hembry. Good morning, friends, and how goes it with you this morning? I'm just fine, only during this awful cold weather I got the lumbago. It wasn't so bad, only twice I got it at a sort of spasm stage and thought I'd croak. I've seen many people with a lumbago but never had it, but now I feel sorry for them. I know how they hurt. Well, I'm okay now. I guess we have to try everything before we get through. I read a cute joke the wife said when her husband failed to help her into the streetcar. She said, "John, you're not so gallant as you were when you were a boy." He said, "No, and you're not so buoyant as you were when you were a gal." I guess not by about 65 pounds. We do change a bit, don't we? Mr. Smith said, "I wear the pants in my family." And his friend said, "Yes, but I noticed that right after dinner you put an apron over them." I must say this before going over any further. To the friends all over the Ozarks, that Mr. Charles Iden over at St. John's Hospital had a good night, they say, and is slightly improved, but he's very, very ill. I went over there last night in the night, the early evening. Our dear Whitmer, pastor at Galena, who visits the sick. I never knew such a man to visit the sick. He came and got me from the hospital and took me over there. Poor Mr. Iden. Maybe he will get well. You know, miracles are performed, and maybe he will. Well, so far in the new year, I guess all goes well. Heaven help us that it may keep on going well with us as a people and as a nation. I've been going over old things. I'm going to do something for Ron directly. I've been going over old things, and trying to clear them out. I guess we do that at the beginning of every new year. My, the stuff I have that I don't want to burn and yet should burn. Going over so many of the clippings last night, I came across a little poem that Virginia gave me, and oh, how it brought back memories that no New Year's can wipe out. It was about a mother. It said, "I found a little record of her days at the old home. A few short lines each day she wrote. My mother's ways were simple. When she planted columbines, she put it down. The days she set a hen. The little calf she weaned from the mother cow. Her daily household tasks. Or when she visited the sick. But oh, somehow, one line apart from others seemed to stand. I went to the post office," she would write. "I look upon it here in her own hand, that one short line she wrote from day to day. Dear God above, can mothers see tonight these tears for letters that I failed to write?" You know, if that little poem can't go to most of our hearts, I don't know what can. "As for me, I wrote to my mother often, but not one half often enough. And there were days when she went to the post office in the little town and didn't get the letters she wanted. But I do love to remember the packages I sent her. Never a week went by but I bought and did up something. It might be just a little thing, but it was a package. And she opened it always with the delight of a child. Someone has said, the old are hungering for love more than for bread. And if you can give them just even a little thin garment of love, it will be better for them than blankets. Now, this boy here, this announcer, Ron Hembry, I want to tell you folks at Galena, he is a distant relative of the fine old Hembry family down there. Frank Hembry, Uncle Saul, and all of them. I think a word of Ron. And he loves the old things, and he's been over to my house. Now, he wants me to do something right now, just a little bit of a poem, and I'm going to do it for him. It's by Mary Elizabeth Mankey about the old fiddler. Well, here it is. He's quit a-playing dry and dusty. You know, dry and dusty is an old fiddle tune. He's quit a-playing dry and dusty. Just hear him scraping off, Puritan lusty. How in the devil do the old folks know that I put sugar in my coffee, oh. Then quick as a wink, it's shortening bread, stomping his foot and shaking his head. For a rain that means a pile of corn's been a-sloshing down since early morn. And we ain't a-grieving or got the blues. Oh, see my new, see my new, see my new shoes, see my new, see my new, see my new shoes. Did you ever hear that? And I forget I'm old and tired and slow when I hear that singing fiddle go. Granny, will you don't bite, don't bite, don't bite. Granny, will you don't bite, no child, no. You like that, Ron, don't you? Did Ron like that? Oh, the beautiful things that Mrs. Mankey wrote and immortalized these old things, the old fiddler. Ms. Clyde Warren at Dora sends me, among some other good things, a new recipe. And now this is for all you gals. How to preserve a husband. First, be careful in your selection, it says. Do not choose too young. And take only such varieties as have been reared in good moral atmosphere. When once decided upon, let that remain settled. Then give all your attention to preserving him. Some insist in keeping husbands in a pickle, while others are constantly putting them in hot water. This only makes them sour and hard and sometimes bitter. Even poor varieties may be made sweet, tender, and good by garnishing them with patience, well sweetened with smiles and flavored with kisses to taste. Then wrap them in a mantle of charity. Don't put them on the ice, but keep them warm by a steady fire of domestic devotion and serve with peaches and cream. How's that for a recipe, you gals? And here's another good thing she sent me, food for thought. It's titled, The Greatest Sin is Fear. The Best Day is Today. The Biggest Fool is the Boy Who Will Not Go to School. The Best Town is the One Where You Succeed. The Most Agreeable Companion is the One Who Would Not Have You Different from What You Are. The Greatest Bore is One Who Will Not Come to the Point. And a still greater bore is the one who keeps on talking after he has made his point. The greatest deceiver is one who deceives himself. The greatest invention of the devil is war. Now that's plenty good. The best work is what you like to do. The best play is work. I remember that. The best play is work. The greatest mistake is giving up. The most expensive indulgence is hate. The stupidest thing to do is finding fault. The greatest stumbling block is egotism. The most ridiculous asset is pride. The worst bankrupt is a soul that has lost its enthusiasm. The most dangerous person is a liar. The most disagreeable person is the complainer. The meanest feeling is envy. The greatest need is common sense. The greatest puzzle is life. The greatest mystery is death. The greatest thought is God. And at last, the greatest thing in all the world, bar none, is love. Now you know it all. Here's an awfully cute thing I read, and it's a fact. It said, Mrs. Ellis Craig, 81, of Porter, Oklahoma, has not missed Sunday school in 1,045 consecutive Sundays. Think of that, which is a record of 20 years. Not missed one Sunday. Well, now, what's the matter, it said. Doesn't she ever have company to keep her home on Sunday mornings? Isn't she ever too tired to go to Sunday school? Doesn't she ever go to family reunions or picnics or mountain trips or weekends? Doesn't it ever rain or snow on Sunday where she lives? Has she never had her feelings hurt and pouted a few Sundays? Has she never been mad at the preacher or the teacher? You mean she hasn't overslept a single time in 20 years? Well, queer woman, that Mrs. Craig. I thought that was a cute thing. It's from a booklet called Wayside Chats, printed in Yakima, Washington. Someone sends me. A lot of people send me things. Someone sends me the signs of the times again. And it's very lovely. Someone sent it to me 3-4 years ago. I don't know who it is. It's so kind. But I once knew a man, our Roy Nelson in Galena, owner of our tomato cannery, who had not missed one Sunday school in 22 years. Not one time. 22 years without a miss. You know, it can be done, and it has been done. Well, I wonder if I have time to give you two recipes. I think I have. And they are not for preserving a husband. One is for gingerbread. And it's from an old scrapbook of 116 years ago. So the Capper's Farmer magazine says, where I got it. It's the cat's whiskers. It says, by guess and by gosh, that's the name of the recipe. And it certainly is. Here it is. I always take some flour, just enough for the gingerbread I want to make. I mix it up with some buttermilk, if I happen to have any of it, just enough for the flour. Then I take some ginger. Some folks like more, some less. I put in a little salt and pearlash, and then I tell one of my children to pour in molasses till I tell him to stop. Then the children bring in wood to build up a good fire, and we have gingerbread for company. Well, now that gets me. I hope she had good luck. I never would. You notice she said she put in pearlash. Do you know what pearlash is? That's what they used to call soda 100 years ago or even less. You notice no sugar was in the gingerbread, just molasses. Sugar was a rare article in those days. Even in my childhood, sugar was not so plentiful. An old Aunt Eller, who worked for us on special days of house cleaning and hog killing and carpet beating and things like that, she says, I never seen such a sight as somebody thinking they have to have sugar stuck in everything they eat. I never tasted anything but molasses and honey for sweetening until I was 14 years old. I bet she didn't either. We dug ginseng to get money to buy coffee, and we drunk it black. And that's the way to drink it. I tell you, Aunt Eller, she was one of the Blue Hen's chickens. How she used to get on to me if I got too lazy to dry the dishes. Here's what she used to say, Ron. She said, just wait till you get married. You'll marry some gander-legged feller that's poor potatoes and few in the hill. You'll drive your ducks to a poor market. You won't have any new dress then or your mammy to make it for you. You'll be a-digging ginseng to buy coffee, too. You just wait and see. She used to scare me, for I believed everything Aunt Eller Tate said when I was a kid. She always described an ornery man as poor potatoes and few in the hill. That's the way they used to describe him. Well, she missed it one thing, for I never have dug ginseng to buy coffee yet. I don't know whether I will or not. I may. You know, ginseng is a root, and they used to dig it. They got along $10 and $15 a pound, if they could ever get a pound together, but it was mighty scarce, and it took a lot to make a pound. But they dug ginseng to buy coffee. And she told me I was going to dig ginseng to buy coffee. When I was about 12 or 13, if I went out in the yard to catch ball with the boys, which I never could catch even in a bucket, she'd say, come in here. You are playing with them boys, and they're yelling like a wall engine. If I was your ma, I'd put you where you'd have to stand up and eat off of the fireboard for a week. And I'll bet she would, too. Oh, playing with the boys, that was a terrible thing when I was a kid. Well, I'll never forget when she got old and was married, and then she still was off of most things. Women began to get permanents for the hair. Well, that got her. You know, they used to give permanents to the heat machines you were hooked up to. They don't do it anymore. And she said, what if one of them wars would start, and they'd start a shooting, and you'd be hooked up to one of them things? Well, she really had something there. She said, I'm sure never going in one of them beauty parlors and have my eyebrows jerked out one at a time like the rest of you and my hair all cut off. You ought to have a little bit left, enough to pin your hat to anyway. Well, I've got to stop. I never get through talking about Aunt Eller. I'll tell you some more someday. I'll see you next Saturday, the Lord willing, in the creek. Don't ride.